It is a great day to be alive in Pittsburgh, PA. Good morning, friends, Yinzers, countrymen. Welcome into another edition of Kabbalion Mac, bi-week edition. We'll get you in a couple episodes here this week with some friends stopping by to visit as well before we push through to week six and when the Steelers will be hosting the now Dillon Gabriel-led Cleveland Browns. That news came down this morning. Maybe we'll talk about that. We'll chat with our good friend Josh Yowie, who covers the Penguins. Of course, he's got his Two for Talking podcast, and the season's about to start. It starts on Tuesday, believe it or not. Is this edition of the Penguins even going to be worth watching? I know what Kabbali thinks already, so I won't ask him. I'll ask Josh. But for Yins out there who want to know what's up with the Penguins with the season about to start, we'll get him on in the back half of today's episode. Plenty to talk about, even though it's the bye week. Make sure you're following along if you're subscribed on YouTube and you're one of the first 3,018 subscribers. You'll have a chance to win your choice, either an autographed Will Howard Steelers helmet or Will Howard, or that autographed Stone Cold Steve Austin vest, which I still have sitting over here next to my desk. Look at that. Right there.
It's upside down.
Shit, it is. Look at that. That's something you'd do. So, yeah, make sure you're subscribed on YouTube, because when we get to 3,018 subscribers, we'll do the random drawing, and whoever's name we pull, you'll have your choice of the Stone Cold autographed vest or the Will Howard autographed helmet. You can also follow along on all your social media, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, X, where you may be watching this right now. And, of course, Instagram as well, where if you're one of the first 500 and we're down to like the last 70, 75 or so until we get there, you could win a $100 gift certificate to Yoli's Cucina and Craft House in Jefferson Hills, where Kaboom loves to go on a Friday night, get a nice cold Mongo and maybe some Yoli Rollies, some Pappy Nola, something good to eat.
Yeah, I'm there about every day now. Right next to the boys' baseball field.
Right down the street from where they play the old fall ball. How's the first year of kid pitch going?
What are we in now? We're in game four. You have to hit the ball, so there's a plus. He's got hitting by the ball. But
did you say he's got hitting?
He got hitting by the ball, but he's still adjusting to the kids throwing the ball anywhere from over the backstops to right down the middle. Yesterday, we had the umpire that had a pretty significant size strike zone.
Oh, I thought you were going to say ass. I'd be like, that's me.
No, so if it rolled in, it was a strike, and if it went over the backstop, it was a strike. But if not, you have 39 walks. So
yeah, whatever. You got to get the kids to swing the bat somehow. So yeah,
I even bribed him to swing the bat, and he still didn't.
Godspeed, my friend.
Just swing.
Those are not exciting days, the beginnings of kid pitch. Not exciting days at all. We've got to thank Southwest Greens for supporting the show. They've been on board since the very beginning. And if you want the best-looking yard in the neighborhood with the least amount of work, by all means, you got to get a hold of Southwest Greens. Go to southwestgreenspa.com. Forget anything you think you know about fake grass. This stuff looks real, acts real, and most importantly, won't take all the time and maintenance and money that maintaining your lawn does right now. Go check it all out at southwestgreenspa.com. We appreciate them supporting the show. Tell Jake that Kabbali and Mac sent you. So we could start in a couple places, but let's put maybe like a final little button or a bow on that Dublin game, which, again, the crowd out at Pittsburgh Brewing, fantastic. It was like, yeah, it was almost like being at a game. That's how loud it was in there. Place was packed, and we appreciate everyone who stopped by and either asked us what channel the next game was on or asked for autographs, which was interesting.
Or asked, I got something to say, fire Tomlin. I'm like, you know, this is probably his best coach game in probably in the past 5 years, but go ahead.
Well, yeah.
Don't stop being you.
You do you, boo. You do you. But the viewership for this Dublin game, I guess, was through the roof. The NFL just put it out this morning. Second most watched international game on NFL Network and NFL Network history. Almost 8 million viewers behind only the 2023 Chiefs-Dolphins game. To be expected, I think, with a team like the Steelers involved, because we know how vast and wide the Steelers Nation is, Kaboom. But that's a lot of people for a Sunday morning.
I don't even think that took account of the local audience, which is probably 80%.
Probably pretty significant, yeah.
It's probably really significant, considering 9:30 in the morning, kegs and eggs everywhere. I mean, I've never seen... That was my first introduction to kegs and eggs, I guess.
I can't believe you didn't know that was a thing.
Oh, I knew it was a thing, but I just never went to it. I was stunned by the amount of companies, restaurants that had it, and the amount of people that actually showed up at like 7, 8 o'clock in the morning. I'm like, wow. So that was pretty impressive.
Yeah, I mean, it was all over the place, not just at Pittsburgh Brewing, but all over town. People were having watch parties of all sorts, including our guy down at Archie's. We might as well give him a plug while we're sitting here talking about the watch parties that were packed on Sunday morning. Head to Archie's every Monday through Thursday night, 80-cent wings down at Archie's on Carson, Pittsburgh's best place for food, drinks, and sports. And not just great wings, great sandwiches, burgers, flatbread pizzas, all of it. And, of course, great drink specials, beer specials, and otherwise. Every single night, go down there, get whatever your favorite frosty cold beverage is, including maybe an ice cold iron. We appreciate Arch supporting the show as well. The thing I wanted to bring up.
I want to bring up real quick is this.
Go ahead. Because you were for late this today because you were busy posting a story.
I was behind schedule. My problem is, my thing is this, and it's up there with the sushi argument. Do you really think that people think Guinness is good?
Yeah, Guinness is
good. Or while in London, you eat the cheese?
No, you don't like Guinness?
Well, when I was like 24, maybe.
So, that's weird to me. You've gone in reverse. Because I think Guinness, in some cases, is more of an acquired taste, and maybe as you get older, you learn to enjoy it more. But you like it less now than you did when you were young.
I was like the Yingling Porter, the stouts, back in the day. Now it's like, I want my beer frosty cold, baby. I don't want it like room temperature.
It doesn't have to be room temperature.
I just don't think that. I think in Ireland, you have to go say, boy. That Guinness on tap is unbelievable.
I mean, Aaron Rodgers said that himself. I mean, you're going to argue with Rodgers?
I guess I can have my own argument because I'm a big proponent of pineapple in Hawaii being a different fruit than pineapple in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a completely different thing.
It's not even close, but I just don't think that people drink Guinness and say, yum, there's that damn dog again. And saying, boy, this is great. Speaking of that, Josh Joey has like never gotten drunk in his life.
I don't know if I believe that.
Oh, he drinks a half a beer.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought I'd seen Joey drink before.
Yeah, the peer pressure, he just holds the beer.
Oh, that's the move. Yeah. That's the move that I do remember that now because I remember hanging out with him for a little bit at Stan Saverin's wake a few years ago, and he had a drink the whole time. I was like, no, he only drinks, but he just holds a can.
Holds it. Yeah, peer pressure. He can't handle it.
Well, Joey hopefully will remain sober when he joins us in a couple minutes here to preview the Penguin season. But the thing I wanted to bring up, as it relates now to the first four games of the season, you were a little less than 25% of the way through, is two things that I think are usually critical for determining success for an NFL team. Rodgers talks about one of them all the time. Red zone conversion percentage and then turnover differential. Red zone conversion percentage, they are seventh in the league right now, second in the AFC, 69%. Nice. Now, there are other teams up near the top of that list that are not having great years, like the Dolphins, I want to say, have like an 80% red zone success rate. A couple other teams that aren't necessarily great in that department. So it's not an end-all, be-all, But I think it's a good sign that this team, when they do put a drive together, is more often than not punching it in. I'll take 69%, second best in the AFC.
Billy Bob, 69%. Yeah, I would like to know how many opportunities compared to, say, Miami. I mean, at one point they were, I mean, Rodgers was 6 of 6 on passing, right? Just on completions in the red zone. And that's been the bugaboo of the past couple of years, not only opening drive success, but red zone success. And, I mean, there's only one difference, and it's number 8. So I think he has a big thing about that. I mean, coming into the season, I mean, that's what we were talking about. That's what he's known for, being that red zone guy that's been able to turn, you know, 3 points into 7 points, and that's a lot of that's the big difference. So I would say that Rodgers that's been his biggest impact, or one of his bigger impacts, is his red zone success.
Yeah, and as long as they keep it, I mean, 70% is a pretty decent number, I think. That's a pretty strong number. You keep it there, I think you're going to feel pretty good. Again, if they're piecing together drives the way they did, especially on Sunday, and the way they did before it went in the tank in the second half against New England, they had a couple nice drives early as well. So that's the one thing, is this offense is not as reliant on that Russ Moonball big play kind of deal to move the ball down the field. They're moving it incrementally sometimes, not always reliant on chunk plays, as we call it.
Yeah, I mean, you have to think that is more effective than throwing the ball as far as you can and hoping a bunch of things happen just to be able to get big yardage. You can accomplish something very similar by seeing what we saw on Sunday. You know, a crosser by DK Metcalf, hit him in stride, and wham, there he goes. I mean, it's more, it's safer. It's something that Rodgers is good at, and you don't have to take into a lot of negative things that could happen if you're throwing the ball down the field here. And that was from day one. I mean, that's one of the first things I noticed when Rodgers and Arthur Smith got together. I said, you're not going to see many deep balls down the field. I don't know if he can throw it. I mean, obviously he can, because we saw what he did to Freiermuth
right
a couple weeks ago, but they choose not to for a multitude of reasons. And one of them is being the efficiency right now. So yeah, I like how the offense has matured, man. I think it's matured into something that's which is better than what it was 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, even though they put up 30-some points against the Jets.
One of the things on offense that some people think has gotten better, although others will tell you it hasn't, it's a big bone of contention among Steelers fans and people that watch them every single game, is the starting left tackle. Pat Meyer was one of the offensive assistants, one of the assistant coaches, I should say, who talked yesterday and was asked if he thinks Broderick Jones is continuing to improve.
Yes, I am. Yep. Just the way, again, the way he practices and the approaches it, that's, you know, I can't really call him young. He still is young, but you don't say, you know, he's year three. You know, it's his growth time, and he's done that. He's still got a ways to go, but we're going to continue to work it every week, where it's like, it's not just what we see on Sunday for the 3 hours. It's what happens on Monday in the classroom, or what happens when we practice Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. That's the approach of practice. When he approaches practice the right way and does the things the right way, and then typically it's there's carryover to the game. So yes, we're going to I expect him to improve each and every week, you know, and so does he. He needs to put it upon himself. The group puts it on each other. So it's not just Broderick. It's everyone. It's me. It's all along.
That's Pat Meyer yesterday.
Look at that fancy graphic. Ooh, ooh, ooh.
You like that? Yeah, I cooked that up this morning.
Oh, how about that? Wow.
Yeah, how about that? So your estimation, Kaboom.
That's been the same argument he's had for 3 years now about Broderick Jones. He doesn't come out and really say it. He doesn't say that he doesn't have any talent. He doesn't say that he's overwhelmed. He basically says if his mind's straight and engaged, he's a good ball player. And that's what I got from that once again. I mean, he said that last year. He said that in the offseason. He said that 2 years ago. It seems like, you know, he just needs to be, I hate to say take it seriously because I'm not in that room. Who knows how seriously he takes it. He just needs to be, like he said, more mature about getting his job done, his work done. When he does, he plays like he did on Sunday.
Well, yeah, he mentioned every day of the week, too. Like, I don't know if Broderick Jones is the kid in the back of the class, you know, throwing spitballs, or if Broderick
could
Jones.
Be. He could. I mean, he could be because he does like to have fun.
And that's great. Like, everybody needs that dude around in the group, right? The guy who's always, I don't know, trying to be funny or whatever. But, like, ultimately, when it comes down to it, and you got a 41-year-old quarterback behind you, and the team traded up to get you, and you're looked at as maybe the linchpin of this offensive line, either reaching its potential or not, it's time to buckle down, my man.
Yeah, he should know that. He should know that because he has to understand that money-making time's quickly approaching here. Whether you pick up his fifth-year option, whether you're going to extend him, still a young guy. I mean, maybe you blame it on Georgia. Maybe they didn't teach him. Maybe he was just so super talented in Georgia that he didn't need to be engaged. Now you get to the NFL and you got, you know, 500 Broderick Jones is running around out there. You have to take it to a different level. Who knows how he got here, but he was extremely young. And, you know, sometimes it just, I mean, like what you saw from Danny, heard from Danny Smith yesterday, you can tell these guys something until you're blue in the face. And sometimes you say it, but they don't hear it. And maybe that's the case, not only with Caleb Johnson with the kick out of the end zone or in the end zone, and maybe with Broderick Jones as well. You're telling him. He knows what to do. It doesn't mean it can translate into that quite yet.
Well, I thought he has played better this week than he did in week three. I thought week two was better than week one. So if we could kind of continue this general upward trajectory,
well, he's been but like
in a
this,
straight
though.
Line he's without like the this. Roller coaster hills, yeah. Like I don't want to ride the jackrabbit. Then that would be nice.
I can't fit in the jackrabbit.
Sure you can.
Ooh, I mean, especially the racer too, where you sit in it and that bar comes down and it hits you in the head. Boom. It's like, what the hell? I had to do the walk of shame the last time.
You got big melon, kaboom. You got big melon.
You ever do the walk of shame?
From a roller coaster? No.
Yeah, it's like you sit in there and you don't fit, you have to get up and walk out. It's like that. God damn it.
No, I've never had it. I think I may have done it once with like one of my kids when they were little and they didn't know if they wanted to ride it or not. Maybe they weren't tall enough or they got scared at the end. I've done that, but I've never had the bar not fit over my head.
I mean, it's not even like it fits here. It just like hits you. It just comes down and hits you in the head. Boom. It's like there's zero chance that anybody, you know, a fraction of my size can even fit in this. You have to be like 127 pounds. But I digress.
You do digress all too often. Thanks to our friends at Nail Studio 2 for supporting the show as well. Look, if you're like me, you got a teenage daughter. There's probably a homecoming dance coming up. She wants to get the nails done. You can book that time online anytime, nailstudio2.com. Nail Studio, it's a Roman numeral too. So nailstudioii.com. Or give them a call, 724-941-4595. They're out there on 19 in the McMurray Peters Township area, Lakeview Square, right next to Juniper Grill. And, of course, they got a great 15% off deal for students, for homecoming services. And if mom takes them in, they'll get 15% off as well. New clients for a limited time getting 15% off all services as well. Completely refreshed and renovated out there in the South Hills. Check them out, nailstudio2.com, 724-941-4595. I mentioned another number that I think is indicative of why the Steelers are playing well through the first four games. It's on the other side of the ball. Well, I guess it's on both sides of the ball. We'll get to it. We'll hear what a couple more of the assistants had to say in just a couple of minutes. But come on, let's bring them in. the man himself, Josh Yoey, joins us here on Kabali and Mac to preview the Penn season and deal with Kaboom's complaints about the Marc-Andre Fleury farewell event.
Forget about this. There is nobody in the human race that complains more about the Pittsburgh Steelers than Josh Yoey. Nobody.
Yeah.
I'm just saying. Facts.
Three playoff wins in 15 years. That's, yeah. I mean, sorry if that's acceptable.
So hold on. Hold on,
Yoey. I lived in Ohio or something. Is that
I have to ask this because this is something I've wondered through the first 4 weeks, not about you specifically, but just about dissatisfied Steelers fans in general. Are you allowing yourself to enjoy the wins and the 3-1 start and the lead in the division and all this through the first four weeks?
I can answer that.
Hold on. Let the man speak for himself. Or are you too caught up in the deficiencies and the errors and the mistakes to allow yourself to enjoy 3-1? Does nothing matter until they win in January?
But before I get to that, Chris, I wanted to start by saying that the last time I went on the racer, I barely fit into the racer, but I almost suffered like a testicle rupture. Like it goes like right down. It's unbelievably painful. That's clearly an old ride. Like when it was, I assume it was built during the Depression when nobody could eat.
So yeah, people smaller testicles back then.
Right. Well, maybe that too. I didn't even think evolution. About that. But
you might want to get that checked out.
But anyway,
enlarged testicles.
Here's what I think the problem is with the Steelers. I watch a lot of football every weekend. Kind of, you know, it's what we do in the fall, right? So I just think the level of play in general in the NFL has declined so much in the last decade. Like, I know there's a few great quarterbacks. Like, every game I watch, it's like, that's a terrible coaching decision. Like, that's awful. That's like the worst penalty. It's just the decline of the league in some ways. Like, it's just not well played. It's entertaining.
Like the time management by LaFleur on Sunday night.
Unbelievable. Like, yeah, like, what is he? If Tomlin would have done that, he would have been run out of town. I mean, that's reality, right? But yeah, I actually enjoyed the Minnesota win, save the last 5 minutes, because I thought they played really well and looked like a functional football team. That was more like it. Like, I actually think Minnesota's pretty good. That was a nice win. Like the New England win was embarrassing. Like they got so lucky to win that game, but they're in first place. I still enjoy it. Okay. You know, it's fine. Wait, it's all right.
Let me read a text real quick for you.
Oh no, please take out the expletives.
I effing love Rodgers. Best quarterback we've had since Ben in 2000. Very similar. I love Rodgers getting pissed at his overrated center today.
Yeah. Yeah. If Zach Frazier went to Nebraska, we went, oh my God, Zach Frazier. Like, bad snaps every game. He's fine. He's average. He's not some superstar. He's not Dermonti Dawson, for God's sake. Did you see Rodgers? Did you see that, though, what I say? I sent you the picture. Yeah. Rodgers going four bad snaps.
I asked Meyer about that yesterday, and he says that's, you know, unacceptable, and he needs to be better. Because, you know, the whole thing about the offense is off of timing and quick and getting rid of the ball quickly. And if you're reaching down to get the ball – it's sort of counterproductive, but
did you ask Pat Meyer if his coaching has been acceptable the last 5 years? Or I guess all these guys are just busts they drafted, and it's not his fault, right?
See, I'm getting him rolled up. I'm getting him rolled up.
There we go.
They don't even look functional some weeks. I guess Pat Meyer he must be the mastermind, though. I'm sure he knows what he's doing. He's not just buddies with the overrated coach, I'm sure.
Got him all wound up.
I think the only reason why he was a coach in the first place is because he was the only one who could work with Matt Canada at the time.
Well, I'll give him credit for that. Now, I like how we just start with the Steelers, Doug, because you know it's going to come at some point when I come on. So I like to just get it out of my system.
Yeah.
He gets so angry. He gets so angry.
Yeah, because there's just certain things I don't have a tolerance for. And I, you know, I just.
Okay, one last thing before we get to hockey. Pat Narduzzi, go.
Oh, Jesus. Or James Franklin, for that matter, if we're going to.
My sources tell me Mark Kabali might be my source. That you know, there's some Pitt PR people who maybe sent along the message to my direction that my tweets about Pat are not really appreciated. I interviewed Pat once in 2016. I thought he's one of the biggest jerks I've ever met in my life. He exudes arrogance. They're the same Pitt that they've always been. They're going to go 6-6 or 7-5. Yeah. He's done nothing to make them better. Just because you beat Wake Forest in the ACC championship game doesn't impress me. Like, I'm sorry. It's the most mid conference in football. He acts like he's Nick Saban or something. It's unbelievable to me.
Your team
has problems too, Mac, because they can't beat the good teams. But at least
H2P, baby, they're going to come after you today. But
I know they are. They're a vicious group, I might add. Oh, my God.
They get really angry really quickly.
The KP8 people got like really upset.
Oh, yeah. No, don't
like,
you
I'm not even a Pitt hater. I've always liked Pitt hoops. Mark Abali can attest to this. I'm a big Chevy Troutman guy. Like
he was a player.
And by the way, I've dealt with Ben Howland and Jamie Dixon, and I love both of them quite a bit. Like wonderful people. Paul Chryst used to always come to Penguins games in the press box. Nicest guy in the world. I'm not anti Pitt. I'm just anti Narduzzi, to be honest.
All right. Well, as long as we cleared that up, yeah. People want to know what you think.
Well, why am I so wound up this morning? It's just Mark. Mark just knows how to needle me.
That's the thing. We get things firing up here so that you're on point and ready to talk Penguins and what otherwise might be a really down year.
I'm not a volatile human being. It's just when I see his face, it just.
Mine or Narduzzi?
Yours.
Yes.
Oh, you just know how to get me worked up. That's all.
Now, here's another one for you. We'll go to the Penguins real quick. Will the Penguins have a sellout this year other than the preseason game for Fleury?
Probably a couple. Although I saw this morning, did you see the advertisements for the home opener?
No.
Like they're going really hard. They tweeted this morning on the big three, like big three autographs at the home opener and like special food prices, Crosby, Malkin, Letang, like deals.
They're just going to play on our fears that this is the last time we're going to see them together.
As they should. I mean, you can do what you got to do to sell tickets. They do so well on those Sunday afternoon games in February and March. Like they could be like, it could be Wilkes-Barre and they'd probably sell out. Whereas they could be playing like the Red Army team on a Monday night and they would have a hard time selling out because nobody likes going to that part of town on Monday nights, which I understand why. But they're not going to have a great time selling tickets. It's just the way it is.
All right. Before we talk about this team specifically, the new coach, the young prospects, final year of Malkin, whether he even finishes the year here, all that kind of stuff. Let's get it out of the way so that Kabali can be.
I'm going to get a tear here. Go ahead.
There we go.
Fleury on Saturday night. So I saw a theory thrown out there that because of the way the Penguins handled this with Fleury, maybe it's something they consider with other franchise legends in the future. Like, hey, maybe Malkin could go off and finish his career somewhere else and he'll feel better about it because he could come back and have that moment the way Fleury did. Would that work with anybody else, or was this a uniquely Marc-Andre Fleury kind of deal?
I don't know that it would work with anyone else, Chris. And I'll be honest, when I first got wind of this a few weeks ago, I thought it was pretty silly. I thought it was a little much. And I still kind of do, but I mean, after being there Saturday night, like it was like a religious experience for the fans. It really was. Like I'm not going to fight it. Like I love Flower, one of the nicest humans on earth. And you could tell that he really enjoyed it. I mean, it was like a playoff crowd. There was not an empty seat at the end of the game. Not one. And an hour after the game, like there were still people in the building. Nobody wanted to go home. So I can't criticize the Penguins, because it was an event that a lot of people enjoyed and thought was special and made them a lot of money too. There was a sense of weirdness about it though. I mean, there was. You're trying to get ready for the season, and instead of Sergei Mirishkov playing a whole game or whatever, you know, Flowers playing in the third period. Guys are like blocking shots in the third period, didn't want him to get scored against. It's a little weird. I mean, it was, but I think he's such of a singular personality. It could work for him. Like, I don't think there's going to be Chris Kunitz night in a couple of years where you do the same thing. That would be odd.
Why is Carlson still on this roster, and can they move him in any way? Or is you're going to have to deal with him until February or March?
You may have answered the question. I think they do want to trade him. The simple problem with him is that his salary cap hit is $10 million, and nobody wants him for that price. I think the Penguins have to eat a lot of money to deal him. And I think they're willing to eat the money, Mark. But I don't think they want to eat the money and get nothing in return, basically. It's one or the other. Like, okay, you don't have to give us anything, but you're taking all this contract. Or, all right, we'll eat $3 million, but you got to give us a good prospect. And I just don't think they've found a dance partner yet. The only reason that he's tradable, though, to me. Now, Mark doesn't strike me as the kind of guy who was watching the Four Nations very closely, the Four Nations tournament back in February.
Oh, I watched it.
I got him into it a little bit.
We had one of our best post-game podcasts after that, right?
Did you?
We did. That's right.
Yes. The best part was the Tkachuk brothers picking a fight with Canada.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Tremendous. Totally agree. Sweden did not win a game in that tournament, if I'm not mistaken, but their best player was probably Erik Karlsson. He was unbelievable all three games. And I know a lot of people in Pittsburgh were like, where the hell has this guy been? But people around the league saw that and like, oh, okay, maybe he can still play. Maybe something's not meshing in Pittsburgh with the coaching staff, whatever. So I think because of that, he probably is movable. Kyle Dubas is he's holding out on getting something more. And the one problem with trading him, and listen, if you want to stink and tank this year, I guess it doesn't matter. But the one thing he can still do, I mean, he's not terrible. He's just not what he was. But he does eat a lot of minutes. That's 25 minutes a night. If you trade him, like, who's going to take those minutes? Crystal Tang's not that guy anymore.
Yeah.
And you don't really have anyone else on the blue line. So he still is important for them, even though he's been something of a disaster his 2 years in Pittsburgh.
Well, do you think they do want to stink and tank this year, or is there some sort of hope? Because I imagine they have to tell Sid, hey, listen, we're going to do everything we can here, bud, to try and get you back to the playoffs. But it's pretty clear and obvious when you've pieced together the roster they have and that a lot of the young prospects you just wrote about it the other day are probably bound for Wilkes-Barre or juniors or college or whatever it may be where they have other options, that they're going to let those young prospects get another year of seasoning under their belt. So it might be a tank and draft high kind of year.
I think they're willing to stink. Like, I don't think they're going to intentionally tank, but I think the thinking is we're going to slide these young guys into the lineup throughout the season. Hold on. And can you guys still see me? There we go.
Yes.
I'm honestly good.
No, we got you.
My computer has to update, and it just – I wasn't feeling it. There you are. Anyway, I think they're going to slide young guys into the lineup throughout the season, win or lose, no matter how that goes. If they play better than expected and the young guys are good, like, okay, great. But if, oh, we have the third worst record in the league, well, we're going to keep doing it because that's okay. And we all know, you know, that there's a prospect coming in the draft next season, Gavin McKenna, who's at Penn State, by the way, Mark, in case Chris hasn't told you about that yet. So he'll be very excited. He's the most hyped prospect since McDavid. He is. So everybody's going to want that first pick this season. I'm sure the Penguins would be willing to stink, but I don't think they're going to trade off people left and right to stink on purpose. But that said, between Rust and Karlsson and Rickard Rakell, I have to think probably two of those guys are gone by the deadline. Otherwise, it doesn't make much sense if you're legitimately rebuilding.
Yeah, I have to be honest. I just had to look up who the head coach was. The MUs, right?
Very good.
Okay, now is he a sacrificial lamb here, for a lack of better terms, is let's wait till this thing gets turned around, then let's bring in a winning coach here. How do you view him so far in his brief time with the organization?
I don't think there's any pressure on him to win. I just think they know they're going to be really young the next two or three years, and he is a guy who specializes in developing young talent. So if at the end of those 3 years they think they're ready to win and he's probably not the guy, maybe he will have done his job anyway and made those young guys better while he was here. But I don't think that's necessarily the game plan. I just think Kyle Dubas thought he was really good, and that's the guy he wanted to go with. So we'll see. I mean, the jury's out. He has beaten the crap out of them in training camp. They're like people ready to puke after every day. He's certainly letting them know who the boss is, and Mark, you would love him. Because this is a media-friendly coach. Yeah. At the end of his first press.
I'm unsure what that means. What does that mean?
Let me ask if your head coach has ever done this. At the end of the press conference, on the first day of camp, he stood outside of the room and shook hands with every reporter and introduced himself as we walked out. I'm like, it's kind of weird. And then after the Flurry game the other night, they're writing our articles. He just walks over and talks to us for 10 minutes about what a cool night that was. I'm like, geez, this guy's awfully nice. Not that Mike Sullivan wasn't a nice guy, but he certainly did do stuff like that. So we're in the honeymoon phase with Dan Muse right now. It's great.
Yeah, Mike Tomlin was great that first year or two.
Well, there you go.
What about What about the young guys that I know you wrote the other day that Harrison Bernicke probably doesn't start in Pittsburgh, even though he's been one of the best, if not the best defenseman in training camp in the preseason. When should people expect to see these guys then? Muroshov, is he going to spend the whole year in Scranton? Are they going to you mentioned folding them in sort of along the way. Is that the way it's going to go? Every couple of weeks, we'll get a new prospect thrown into the mix?
Yeah, well, I'll go one by one. Sergei Muroshov, who I really do think is their goalie of the future, he's been spectacular in camp. My understanding is he's probably going to be in Wilkes-Barre most of this year. They just want him to kind of continue to develop and dominate down there. And I think next season he's the guy. I think that that's the progression that he's on anyway. Harrison Brunick's different. The way the rules are set up, he's only 19. So he's not allowed to go to Wilkes-Barre, which is the stupidest rule ever, but that's the way it is. So he either has to go back to the Junior Hockey League in the Western League, or he stays in Pittsburgh. Those are basically his options. He's also allowed to stay in Pittsburgh for 9 games, and after 9 games, they can send it back down if they want. My guess is they'll keep him for the first 9 games, and if he plays great, maybe they do keep him. He's really good. He's really mature on and off the ice. I don't know that going back to juniors is going to help him all that much at this point. He's the one that really might stick of the big-name prospects. Muroshov, I really think, will be in Wilkes-Barre. And Ben Kindel, who was their highest of the three first-round picks in June, boy, he had a good camp. The last five or six days, really impressive. Played great in the preseason game, scored a goal the other night in Detroit. So all the fans are like, he's got to be in. He's got like, no, he's 18 years old. He's also not a big kid at all. He might get killed if he plays 82 games in the NHL this season. I really think they'll send him back to juniors. But in a year or two, they might have something. He reminds me a lot of Jake Guentzel, actually. He's got a lot of talent.
I think I looked up and they have three of the maybe 12th oldest guys in the NHL play for the Penguins right now, yet they're very young. Are they trying to just, you know, straddle both sides of the roads here, Josh, of keeping the older guys and trying to rebuild? Do you feel that they should maybe go one way or the other, or just, you know, rip the Band-Aid off and just say, I guess you can't with Gino and Tanger.
That's the problem.
Yeah. Like, or could they with Gino? I mean, well, Markov in Florida is out.
I do think, listen, Gino, for those who don't know, has a full no movement clause, so he calls the shots. He also owns a house about 45 minutes from where the Panthers play. Who wouldn't want to go play for that team? Like, if I'm Kyle Dubas, I'd probably call them and say, hey, do you have any interest? Like, I would, and I'd say to Gino, hey, if you want to go play there, go. If you want to stay, it's up to you. But if it were up to Dubas, and he's never told me this, this is me, you know, just my opinion, I think he would trade Letang and Malkin in a heartbeat if he could. I really do. I don't think anybody wants them, especially Letang. I mean, Letang was terrible last year. You know, he just had heart surgery. He's had 2 strokes, and he makes more than $6 million a year. I don't think he's tradable. I don't know what you do with him. So I think Dubas wants to go young. I'm not so sure, Mark, that Dubas wouldn't trade Crosby if he could. I know that sounds crazy, but I don't think he'd be against it. Like, if Sid came to him and said, yeah, maybe I do want to go to Montreal, I don't think Kyle would fight him. Like, I do think Kyle wants to rebuild this team and go young, but Crosby's just still so good that it's not like he hurts you being around for a few more years. But the other guys, Carlson, Letang, Malkin, if he could trade them, there's no question he would. He would go young in a heartbeat. That's the goal. That's what he wants. It's unfortunately going to take some time because of the contractual situations.
What's the level of ownership involvement at this point? Because they're in this weird phase where they're kind of being sold, but Fenway's still in control, but Fenway doesn't really give a shit anymore. I don't even know if anybody from there is in Pittsburgh anymore. So let's say Dubas decided tomorrow, hey, okay, I got a deal on the table for Gino, and yeah, I can get something in return for Letang, and what the hell? Like Kibale said, I'll rip the Band-Aid off, and I can get a couple first-rounders and whatever else from Colorado for Sid. What would be there in place to stop him from doing that?
Nothing. Fenway, I don't know that Fenway gave a shit 2 years ago. Like, the Penguins are an investment to them. Like, they're not really around. Like, they have some people around. Yeah, Fenway hasn't done anything wrong. They let them spend to the cap. They whatever. But Kyle Dubas is by far the most powerful man in the organization. He's calling the shots here, okay? Fenway has, like one person who's kind of assigned to the Penguins, but he lives in Milwaukee, so he's in Pittsburgh sometimes. Like, they don't really have, and people at the Penguins get mad at me. They're around, you just don't see them. Like, well, okay, I cover the team and I don't see them. So, like, the fans really don't see them. There's no real influence there. And I'm not saying they should be like Jerry Jones and giving interviews after every practice, even though that's kind of funny. But, I mean, they're not really around. Dubas has full power to do exactly what he wants. And you're right, it is kind of strange now. Like, we know there's a chance they could be sold in the next couple of months here, but they might not be. Nobody really knows. But from everything I've been told, he still has the flexibility to spend money if he wants, to trade, make trades if he wants. Now, the only thing that's interesting, you know, the Hoffman family that's, you know, obviously interested in buying the Penguins. Like, if you're them, I would think you don't want Sidney Crosby traded. Like, that's still your biggest chip, right? Like, I would think you'd want to have the power that, yeah, we'll trade him. Or now we want to keep him. That's Sidney Crosby. He's still, you know, sells tickets in Pittsburgh. But from what I've heard, they don't really have the power to do that yet until they do own the team. And I don't think Kyle feels restricted by ownership at all.
What would you think it would take to, for Crosby to approach management and say, okay, I'm done here? Would it be anything?
I think it's unlikely that he ever goes. Like, all the stuff that his agent, Pat Brisson, said a few weeks ago. Like, I don't think Sid was real thrilled with those comments. A lot of people said, oh, of course Sid knew about it because that's his agent. No, I don't think he did. I really don't. I think Sid's agent and his people close to Sid, they probably hear him kind of, you know, a little grumpy talking about this team, just being upset about how bad they stink right now. And Sid's never going to go to management and say, hey, this team sucks, I'm not happy. Like, that's just not his way. But they hear him. They see him. He's unhappy right now. He's not used to losing. And so I think that was Pat Brisson basically coming out and saying, you know, hey, don't trade Brian Rust. Don't trade Rickard Rakell. You know, let's keep my guy happy. That doesn't mean Sid wants to go. What would it take? Honestly, Mark, the only thing I can think of would be if Kyle Dubas management, somebody really mistreats Malkin and Letang. Like, seriously, like if they were treated poorly on their way out the door, those guys are all so close. Maybe that would irritate him to the point that he wouldn't want to be around, but I doubt it. I just, at the end of the day, I think he wants to win again, but I think being here is still probably more important to him. He doesn't like change, Mark. He's very much set in his ways. Just to go live in another city would probably drive him nuts. Like, I just don't think he'd be comfortable with it.
So do you think going to play in the Olympics, does that sort of quench his thirst for that competitive level of hockey? Or does that open his eyes? I know we just had the four nations, but does that open his eyes to the possibilities of what he could actually finish his career with?
I think it helps. I think it's something, it's that dangling carrot for him to look forward to in February. I think four nations helped him last year. And he was like, he played better after four nations. Like, he got hot. He was, I don't know, not that he was in a bad mood before, but that perked him up a little bit. I really think it did. And the Olympics are obviously an even bigger deal. I think that helps satisfy the thirst a little bit that he has, because I'm the kind of man who checks out the books in Las Vegas from time to time. And I can tell you right now, the Penguins in Vegas are given a 9% chance to make the playoffs, which sounds about right. Like, they're not good. They're going to give up a ton of goals. I'd be really, really surprised if this team made the playoffs. It's far more likely they're a bottom five team. So that's hard for him. It just is. And my thing with Sid, like, we all assume he's going to play forever. Nah, 3 or 4 years, they'll have all these talented young guys. They'll be good again. Storybook ending, perfect. I don't know if he wants to play that much longer. I don't. He may. I think ideally he would like to play a few more years, but he only has one more year on his deal after this. Like, if they really stink this year and if they still stink next year, I don't know. I mean, maybe he walks away at that point. I don't want to put words in his mouth, but it wouldn't shock me if that were the case.
No.
He needs to feel some hope at some point.
If I'm looking up and down this roster right now, and obviously there's not too many familiar names here, but if there was one guy that Josh Joey would say come April, is you look at him and say, man, this guy came out of nowhere and he's a player, who would your pick be right now?
I've got a young center by the name of Tristan Brose, who was their second-round pick a couple of years back. I saw him play a year ago. I wasn't that impressed. He's like a different guy now. He might make the team out of camp. And he's not going to be a superstar, but he's a really nice player. I think he could be a good third-line center type for them. So him, and I, even though Penguins fans know this guy already, Ville Koivunen, who came up at the end of last season, he was part of the Gensel trade. He's a really nice player. He's not very big. That's his the one issue with him, but boy, he does everything really well. I could see him being a 20-goal, you know, 60-point guy in the near future.
The one thing this team hasn't had in forever, Josh, that fans absolutely love, and I think we're dying for them to have during the final few years of Sullivan when it was the whole turn the other cheek, just play hockey deal, was like one of those depth forward agitators who's going to get under the opposing team's skin and start like five fights at a game in Philly. Do they have a guy like that in camp right now?
Funny you should say that. They do. One of their better young prospects is a guy named Avery Hayes, who might make the team. He's got a chance, and he'll definitely be up at some point this season. He's one of those guys. If he doesn't make the team, you're going to see him in January. I was actually talking with Rucker McGroarty last year when he got called up, and he was talking about all the success they had had in Wilkes-Barre. He would not shut up about Avery Hayes. I said, what is it about this guy? He said, well, he's everybody's favorite teammate, but he said, like, sometimes before games, he'll just look at us and he'll say, hey, I'm going to be a prick this game. And then, like, on the first shift, he just runs the goalie. I'm like, I said, you know what? You guys actually kind of need some of that here. Like, you need somebody. He's got, like, a little bit of Max Talbot in him. He's definitely the kind of kid who gets under people's skin a little bit. So, yes, I think Avery Hayes will be a fan favorite before long. He's definitely one of those guys. And it's nice to actually talk about prospects who are good. Because for years and years, like, people always wanted to, why Sully doesn't play the young guys. Like the last conversation I had with Mike Sullivan before he was fired, was like back in March after a practice, we were talking. He says, trust me, I hear all the criticism. I know everyone thinks I don't play young guys. I said, yeah. He said, he actually pointed at the door, like the locker room door. He said, I haven't seen Brian Rust or Jake Gensel walk through that door in a while. What do you want me to do? And it's a fair point. But now finally they do have some young guys on the way.
It's funny. Your Sully voice is very similar to your Artie Stevens voice.
Well, they're both from Boston. What do you want me to do? I only have one Boston accent.
Drop all your ahs. You'll be fine.
Artie's more like just F-bomb after F-bomb. Like when you see Artie, like the first sentence, like, how you doing? You know, it's like he can't help himself.
All right. I know you got to get out by 11 o'clock, so we're going to let you run. We'll catch up with you again soon. Hey, we know to expect your occasional grousings towards the Steelers. I was trying to downplay it a little.
Listen, I watched the Bengals play the other night. They better be 5-1 after the next two games. I'm going to leave it at that. Otherwise, I will be very unhappy.
You're not a big Dylan Gabriel guy now?
I don't even worry about those losers when they come to town. But I watched the Bengals offense the other night, and I'm certainly not a Jake Browning fan either. Good Lord.
Maybe Russell Wilson will be their quarterback by then.
It's your boy. It would actually make sense.
Maybe.
I want to see Josh. Anyway. I know you don't have a trip to Buffalo to make, but enjoy the start of the season and the end of the preseason and all that good fun. And we will catch up again soon, my man. Thanks for doing it.
Success, gentlemen. Always a pleasure.
Yep. We'll talk soon.
We'll see you.
Josh Yoey with us here on Kabali and Mac. The nostalgia factor is strong, Kaboom. We forget about that. People don't want to see the big names go.
Oh, forget that. You should see some of the text messages he sends me about the Steelers that I can't read publicly. It's right during like the middle of the game, too. I mean, how do you want me to respond to this?
He just wants to feel heard and validated.
I leave it on red. Is that what the kids say?
Yeah. Do you go scroll back through all the texts at the end of the day and catch up on how Yoey rode the emotional roller coaster of Steelers game?
Even if it does turn out favorably, he'll never admit it.
No.
He's anti-Tomlin, anti-everything. Although he's a big Aaron Rodgers guy now.
That's true. He is. Thanks to the Dan Heck team for supporting the show. We appreciate them. They've been on board since the very beginning. You're looking to buy or sell a home in the Pittsburgh area. I swear, every time I drive through another neighborhood, I see another Heck team home sign up in somebody's yard. They are the people to get it done for you. The entire team waiting to help you buy or sell a home and get into the perfect situation for you and your family. Go to heckteamhomes.com, HAECK, heckteamhomes.com. We appreciate the Dan Heck team supporting the show here on Kabali and Mac. All right, the other thing I wanted to talk about before Yoey jumped in was another number that I think is pretty predictive of whether a football team is going to be winning games or not. And it definitely has been so far this year. I'll give credit to Alex Kozora of Steelers Depot for pointing this out yesterday. Steelers are second in takeaways, eighth fewest in giveaways, second in turnover differential at +7. Only the Jaguars, I believe, at +8 are better than the Steelers at turnover differential right now. Kaboom. No coincidence. Both of those teams are 3-1 to start the year. I know you're not high on the Jags, but we're not here to talk about Jacksonville. The turnover differential, and look, that number gets boosted, obviously, by the New England game, but they've continued to come up with big plays in big moments. You know, Deshaun Elliott, we talked about him a little bit on Sunday afternoon, I think is the key in the secondary, but you're seeing Patrick Queen do some different things in this past week's game in particular. You're seeing TJ Watt just continue to do TJ Watt things, batting a ball in the air and picking it off. It feels like the focus on turnovers. I know they said it's constant, but it feels like it's been accentuated through the first month of the season.
Yeah. I like to go the other side of it though, because I think obviously with the turnover differential, you need to have it be positive on the other side. And they really haven't turned the ball over at all, hardly at all. Yeah. I mean, maybe a couple, what do you have? Two interceptions? Three. And I don't even know if they had a fumble, have they?
No.
Oh, yeah. Well, what I'm saying is they've taken care of the ball as well, too, or that number could be skewed one way or another. As long as, I mean, this is the NFL. We all know this. Who watches this game, who covers this game. If you don't turn the ball over and you create turnovers, you have a good chance of winning games, and that's where they've been at right so far. Even if they don't get the five turnovers, they probably have a good chance if they don't turn it over on the other side. So as long as they keep that up, I mean, I think they are destined to, you know, at least go 5-1 to start this season. And how many issues the Ravens have right now and the Browns have and the Bengals have right now, man, it's right there, right for the taking. So they got to take advantage of this, I think. But, yeah, I just like how they're taking care of the ball. You don't see many on the turf.
No, I mean, it doesn't count as a turnover, I guess, but the Caleb Johnson play on the kickoff against Seattle.
Danny Smith. Huh?
Yeah, well, Danny talked about it yesterday, actually. Nice little segue there. He was asked about it.
Caleb Johnson, what happened with his situation?
You know, before I even got to Caleb, the players were at Caleb. You know, so I didn't say much, to be honest with you. A couple that come to mind, you know, Connor Hayward was saying, we go over it all the time. And so that was even before I got there. Okay, so I really didn't say much on the field to him. We replaced him at that time. He wasn't ready to go back on the field. And I dealt with it the next day in a tape session.
I think there's a certain part of you that has to have a screw loose to be a special teams coach in the NFL. And Danny lets his screw fall completely out sometimes. Forget just being loose.
I tried to watch that clip again and see when it really hit him when it came into his head. Maybe I should be a really high screeching voice, pretend like I'm Connor Hayward. I think I was able to pretty much detail when he was going to be able to do when he decided to do that, which I think is great. I mean, let's face it, Danny Smith does not have a lot to do anymore, right? So he goes over the minuscule, minutia of everything. I mean, I ask him about the onside kick. Why are you counting timeout?
Right.
I mean, you have to do it twice. And he's like, man, this kicker never did it before. He's rookie, and he never did it in Alabama, so we have no clue. He goes, I look at everything, and he does. He absolutely looks at everything. And that's why when that happened and they said, you heard this narrative of, oh, Danny needs to tell him. Danny tells him. Just like when you write a story, what you write might not be what people read, you know, or understand. What Danny tells you over and over and over again might not always get in between those ears of those younger guys. So Yeah, Dan Easley. Always, he talks sparingly, but when he does, he always brings the goods.
Yeah, he said he's watched every blocked kick to this point in the season around the league multiple times.
Yeah. Yeah. So. I mean, you got to do stuff like that. I mean, how many times are there even onside kicks attempted anymore, let alone, you know, practicing them to a degree of being that flawless of a back-to-back Roman Wilson recoveries, you know? So I think that's – and I hear some complaints about having Corliss Waitman kick it out of bounds. I'm like, Corliss, first of all, he had to be told that. Like I said the other day, Corliss Waitman's a professional kicker, professional punter. He's not kicking the ball 30 yards out of the back of the end zone unless he's told to do that.
Well, but
the bottom line is this. They came up and they had only a 10-man block, whatever, and they had a guy back, so he's kicking it out of the end zone. If they were going full-on block, then they're going to try to dump it inside the 5-yard line. That was the call.
Yeah, I would have preferred to let him try to drop it down in there anyway. I mean, touchback in that case is only out to the 20.
Yeah, but what's the worst thing? The worst thing can happen is a block kick, right? So you just get it away. I'll deal with it at the 20-yard line. That's the way I look at it.
Yeah, it sounded, according to Danny, too, yesterday, like they were worried about a possible return, too. Like, you don't want to screw around with a punt return at that point in the game.
Or just a block. I mean, a block, you're just like, what in the world are we doing here? And the bottom line is they won, so it worked. It worked.
I guess. All right.
And if we're sitting here complaining about whether the punter kicks it out of the back of the end zone with a minute left or whatever the hell was left, then we don't have much to complain about.
Good point. Thanks to our good friends at Higgins Professional Painting. You want to get a fresh coat on your home? They do interior, exterior. They'll even do commercial and industrial painting as well. So if you have a business you want to get done, wherever you have them come in and do the painting, they're going to do a great job. Their family's been doing it for 40 years. They'll come in, give you that color consultation like they did at Cabali's house a couple weeks ago. Wow. They're ready to sit down and talk to you about your entire project, get you a free estimate. Get in touch with them today, HigginsProfessional.com, or give them a call, 412-344-0480. Give your home that fresh coat of paint that maybe it's been needing or lacking, and up the curb appeal. Like I said, interior or exterior with Higgins Professional Painting, HigginsProfessional.com. Appreciate them supporting the show.
I still have people reaching out to me saying, what do you think of this Higgins people? I need some work done. I'm like, go for it. Absolutely go for it. But I think we're on the, you know, we got the color all picked out, and it's just down the home stretch now, I think.
They'll come in, they'll do a fantastic job, and you'll come home from work one day and you'll be like, look at this whole new feeling just from one coat of paint or a couple coats of paint, I guess.
The wife's office, you know, whatever.
When are you going to get that room done?
This one? This one's too big, man.
What are you talking about?
Man, you need like 30 gallons of paint to do this one.
Okay.
I don't even know, man. I would make it like blue or something, right?
I'm sure they could do some kind of like black and gold striping or something. You know, you can make a big Steelers room.
Maybe put a big emblem up or something. Maybe a big fat head of somebody.
Yeah.
Too.
Yeah.
Or a really bad 1990 whatever poster in the back.
I mean, any of those. I'm trying to remember what was the best. There was a Bettis one, wasn't there? You remember those like themed posters you'd get from like Sports Illustrated? I think it was. There was the Bo Jackson one where he had the shoulder pads and the bat over his shoulders.
I had the life size Charles Barkley one where it was 6'6". You know, I had.
Oh,
that. The, I also the had the Checkmate one. The Checkmate. You remember Yager?
Yeah, that was a good one too. That's what I mean. Those posters that had like the catchphrases on them. I was a big fan of those back in the day.
Yeah. My kid won a poster a couple years ago. He had to put like a ticket in to win it. He put it in the wrong one. He wanted like Yoda. Instead, he got a Corvette. goes, in my garage, there's a poster of a red Corvette. He goes, I put it in the wrong basket. I put it in the wrong basket.
Do you remember the little mirrors you could get at like the carnival back in the day with the band logos on them?
The Chuck-a-Luck.
Yeah. I mean, I had a cousin that his whole room was filled with those. And it was just early to mid 80s metal and hard
Quiet
rock.
Riot.
Like Def Leppard, Quiet Riot, Ozzy, Motley Crue.
Ozzy is Kevin Gorman's favorite band, your favorite singer.
Really?
No, really, he hates Ozzy.
Oh, I was going to say, that doesn't strike me as a Gormy thing.
No, he hates him.
Gormy strikes me as hanging out in the back of a coffee shop while someone does some like improvisational jazz in the corner.
Yeah, that's because of the hair, right?
I don't know. He's just more chill and laid back. He's not like Yoey, like yelling about things constantly.
I don't know. It's those Baldwin guys.
We're chill. We're laid back.
Unless you decide to punch a player from Elizabeth.
Unless you're a wide receiver on the high school football team. Real quick, and then we'll wrap it up. I handed you a couple of games on Monday night in our picks competition. You took my you took Miami and Denver. I took the Jets and the Bengals.
So we are back. The Bengals. Wow.
I don't know.
Wow.
I think at that point, I just wanted to pick a couple games differently than you because we'd picked almost everything else the same to that point. We'd picked every other game the same other than Carolina, New England. So I made a couple different picks. So we're tied again. 38-24 and 1 because there's a tie in there now. Tomorrow night, San Francisco, Rams. Give me a pick.
Where's it at?
In L.A. I know you get PTSD talking about so far.
You know, I'm going to go with the 49ers. They tend to really stick it to the Rams from time to time.
Really?
Just the way they run the ball and the way they like to push them around. So I'm going Rams. I'm going 49ers.
I think they've lost 3 in a row to the Rams, I want to say. Purdy's dinged up. Kittle's still out. Whoever else. Feels like there's a million guys out for the Niners.
Well, it's not like you're beating me, so.
Well, I'm going to take the Rams, so I have something to root for. And then we'll go over. We'll make picks for the rest of the week on Friday. Also on Friday, since it's a bye week and we're into having guests this week, our good buddy Dave Damashek is going to join us.
Shekaroonie.
Yep, we'll get a bye week check-in from Dave Damashek. There's a million different things we could talk to him about.
Yeah, of course it's going to be Karate Kid, and he's going to rip on Miyagi, and he's going to try to make me mad again. He does it every single time.
I can't wait. But we'll do that on Friday, probably around 10:30 or so. Yins, enjoy the rest of your Wednesday and your Thursday. We'll talk to you again soon. Don't forget to follow on social media and get yourself subscribed on YouTube at Kamali and Mac. We'll talk to you soon.